Hey, everybody, this is Andy Marquette, and I am joined by my colleague and friend, Lise MacTague. How are you, Lise? We are Les Geek Out, and we're geeking out, sort of.
Yeah, I'm excited. I haven't gotten the Les Geek Out treatment for my name before. That's very cool.
So here we are, friends. We are a geekly bi-weekly podcast where we talk about all kinds of things, books, movies, comics, graphic novels, TV shows, writing, characters, yeah, whatever we feel like talking about. That's what we do on the Les Geek Out podcast. This week we have a novel lined up to chat about, but Lee, seriously, how are you doing? How are things going with the COVID crap?
Oh, well, you know, Same shit, different day. Mostly, I'm a little punchy because I slept for shit last night, and I've had a beer. So, I'm a lightweight. This is going to be fun.
This is going to be a good podcast, y'all. I had a crazy day, meeting after meeting after meeting for my other life, and now I'm drinking. Let me tell you all what I'm drinking, and you can share what you're drinking. I am drinking something called Shake Chocolate Porter by Boulder Beer Company, Colorado's first craft brewery. Friends, 1979. Go Boulder Brewery. It's a very smooth, delicious kind of beer. How about you?
Lovely. I'm drinking Victory Brewing Company's Sour Monkey Sour Triple, which is not only a sour beer, but it also has a 9.5% ABV, which is why it only takes one for me to get a little punchy.
That's all you need on the, like, I have had Victory beers, but there's another beer out there by Abita Brewing in Louisiana, and that is it's one of my favorites, even though it's spelled differently, Andy Gator. And it's like 8.5% ABV, so just one of those knocks you on your ass and you don't see it coming. Mm-hmm. So wise choice.
I love me a sour beer, so... Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I love pretty much anything except, you know, an IPA or anything that's super hoppy. But a nice sour beer is really great. I love that tartness with my beer.
Don't worry, be hoppy. Here's a little song I wrote as I drink the beer. Okay, anyway. Oh my God.
No.
I'm showing my age. Yeah, that's an oldie but goodie, friends. That's like back in the fucking day. All right, friends, this week, Lise and I read we had to keep putting this off, but we finally are able to talk about a book that Lise and I have, you know, I think I ran across this on Twitter, I think is where I saw this. And I was like, oh, wow, we've got to read this because there's a woman of color on the cover. And as Lise and I have talked about, we're trying to diversify our reading list and to read more authors of color and more stories that feature characters of color. This is Ascension, which is ostensibly, it was supposed to be the first in a series, a Tangled Axon novel by Jacqueline Koyanagi, the author. And Ms. Koyanagi, according to her most recent bio, resides in Colorado. Maybe she drinks Boulder beer. Oh my God. And where she writes on occasion, she hasn't been writing as much as she had since this novel, which was published in 2013, but she has done some cyberpunk for Serial Box. That's S-E-R-I-A-L, Box, Serial Box. And she's done a couple of short stories. And she also says in her bio, she constructs chainmail, these. So perhaps she might even do a little bit of cosplay. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Regardless, Ascension is a book that, again, I saw it on Twitter and I was like, we should read this. This is really great. It's a space opera. Let me, like, from Amazon, here's the description, friends. Alana Quick is the best damned sky surgeon in Heliodor City, but repairing starship engines barely pays the bills. So the desperate crew of a cargo vessel stops by her shipyard looking for her spiritually advanced sister, Nova. Alana stows away on the ship. Then, of course, hijinks, adventure, and trauma and drama ensue. A variety of different adventures, and we have an extremely diverse cast, diverse in a whole lot of different ways. And Lise, I'm going to turn it over to you now to talk about some of the folks in this crew.
Yeah, absolutely. So starting with our main character, Alana Quick is not only a woman of color, a black woman, but she is also someone who is queer and is living with a debilitating illness, which manifests as a chronic pain condition. And if she doesn't get her medication, she can be quite literally crippled by the pain and the effects of this degenerative disease.
Mm-hmm.
So she's who we meet like right off the bat. And then we also have, oh gosh, well,
so many. Let's talk about her sister. Okay, we've got her sister. So the crew of this ship, the Tangled Axon, that's where that comes from, are trying to locate Alana's sister, Nova. And Nova is possessed of certain skills. She's a spiritual guide. And so what that means is it's kind of new agey woo-woo. That was my take on it to help me understand the world building. And so she has like these kind of like magical, but maybe more like Reiki kind of powers. I don't know.
Like this was metaphysical.
Yeah, thank you. Metaphysical powers that she uses to help people with a variety of things. So it's like this kind of magic practitioner, but also therapist. It's like that. So Nova and Alana do not have the best of relationships, but regardless, Alana knows how to find her. So the reason the crew needs Nova is because they think that she's the gateway to a cure for the ship's navigator, Mar, who leaves. I'm turning it back over to you, who is a little bit different.
Yeah. Mar is a little bit different is saying something. Alana's first introduction to Mar is when Mar kind of like pops into the brig where Alana is being held. And, you know, because she stowed away on the ship, right? I mean, mm-hmm. She wasn't exactly met with open arms. She's a sky surgeon, basically an engineer, and she's stowing away on a ship that already has one and doesn't really need those skills. They just need her to find her sister. Anyways, so Mar kind of just appears to her. And what's immediately striking about her is that she's not quite all there. And I don't mean that she's a little vague. No, she is literally, like, you can literally see through her in parts. And then she has this cryptic exchange with Alana and then just kind of vanishes. And that's sort of Mar in a nutshell. She's this ethereal person who is the ship's pilot and navigator. But this whatever condition she has that makes her disappear is only accelerating. Mm-hmm. And so the crew has pulled together because they really want to save her. And they think that Nova is, like you said, the key to making that happen. Now, they don't expect Nova to actually fix her, but they want to use Nova as a bargaining chip with someone who can.
Mm-hmm. We can talk about a little bit more about that in the world building aspect. Let's talk about the other three characters on the ship. There's Mar, now Alana, who is stowed away. There's Tev, the captain, who has mm-hmm. apparently, she's a humanoid who has come from, it sounded to me like she came from someplace like Australia, like one of those stations.
Like a ranching Australia. World.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So she too is a little bit different than what you get in a lot of fiction in that she has a prosthetic leg. And she's also sort of like very protective of Mar. Because, you know, it becomes very apparent that this crew is a family, a very weird mm-hmm. family, but a family nonetheless, and that they're there for each other. And Tev is engaged in a relationship with Slip, the ship's medic, who yes. then there's the other engineer, the ship's engineer, Ovi. Tell us more about Ovi. Yeah, right? Exactly. We're just like, wow, how to describe this dude?
Yeah. So Ovi's situation is unusual, and it's never explicitly explained what is going on with him. My personal reading, and I could be very wrong on this, but my personal reading is that he is a person who has the soul of a wolf.
Mm-hmm.
And not in that, like, that bullshit way that you know, transphobes are like, oh, well, I identify as an attack helicopter. None of that crap. He mm-hmm. is, you know, in the deepest part of him, that's who he is. And so Alana, as a sky surgeon, is able to sort of interface with these ships in a way that goes beyond, like, just an engineer. And the Tangled Axon seems to, like, crank that particular ability with her up to 11, where the ship is, like, almost talking to her. And the more time she spends on it, the more she, I think you termed it second sight.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she gets this second sight where she's really able to see the other people on the ship for who they are. And so she catches glimpses of Ovi's sort of wolf-like nature, like a tail here and the ears and the teeth mm-hmm. there, because that's who he is deep inside, even though the rest of the world sees him as a human.
Mm-hmm. He and my reading on his character too is that he's also, when he's presenting as human, that he's a man of color. That was my read on him, given the description. And I just thought, wow, this is awesome. We have, like, a really interesting and diverse group of characters on this ship. And they're all from very different backgrounds. They all have, like, shit in their past that
mm-hmm.
isn't the best. And you know, Lise, I love me some anti-hero kinds of bandit-like space crews.
Uh-huh.
Like, that's, like, my jam. So they have to go on this quest to locate first Nova, and then they have to go to the party who is allegedly going to cure Mar of whatever this is that's causing her to literally blink and fade in and out of existence. And the way that Koyanagi describes that was, I thought, really, really cool and impressive, because I could visualize her skin, like, kind of like blinking out and then blinking back.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of like, I kept thinking of sort of like, you know, pixels rearranging themselves.
Yeah.
You know, in
Koyanagi really has a gift, I think, for description. Mm-hmm. A lot of the way she describes things was easy for me as a not particularly visual person to really, like, see a lot of the stuff in my head. A lot of her descriptions are almost cinematic.
Oh, think, absolutely.
In
yeah.
the way she approaches not only, like, what she chooses to describe and when, but also, like, the pacing of mm-hmm. a lot of her stuff.
Mm-hmm. It was really, you know, that first interaction that Alana has with the ship, when she stows mm-hmm. away on the ship, and, you know, the sky surgeons are supposed to be really tuned in to a starship because they're charged with keeping these things in the air. And yet Alana has never apparently visited space, even though she mm-hmm. has this gift with ships. So when she's on the Tangled Axon and she gets her first view of the expanse of space, like you could like Koyanagi's description, my chest got tight because mm-hmm. I could see what she was seeing, and it was so meaningful and amazing to her, and it was just so well conveyed in that storyline that I got verklempt, please, literally.
And I mean, she's not the only one who feels that way. I mean, that's a sensation that she shares with Tev, and I think is one of the ways that she and Tev really bond early on, because of course, you know, Alana is in deep trouble with this ship captain, and what does she do? I mean, the first thing she does is get the hots for her. So
she didn't mean to. It's totally.
But I can't necessarily say I disagree. I mean, you know, what's not to love about a competent woman in charge, right?
So true.
Mm-hmm.
And she shares that moment too with Tev when they're both like looking at the expanse together. You know, there's that secret place, kind of secret, that Tev has that she goes to clear her head. And it's like up above where you can open the portals and you can see the expanse of space. And it was like, oh man, that is So, wow. Because that's something that's one of my little dreams too. I've always wanted to do that, right? Be a starship person and like, oh, see the expanse of space.
Yeah, no, I'm good right here. Thank you.
Lisa's a little more grounded, y'all. Okay, so we've got, you know, this interesting cast of characters, and they've all got maybe some shady things in their past, maybe not. And then we've got Alana, who another tension that was, I thought, really interesting, because you don't see a lot of characters who are dealing with a chronic illness. Another tension in the story was when she was running out of medicine.
Yeah. So the medicine is really interesting. You know, not only is it sort of a way that we get to, I guess, sort of experience the tension of what Alana is going through, but it also acts as like that ticking clock, right? Mm-hmm. It's this thing that she's always aware of, and this thing that is always going to compel her forward is the relationship between her disease and how much medication she has to control it. And, you know, we see that there is a point where she runs out of her meds, and it just, that disease just rears up and knocks her ass over a tea kettle. And then they all have to engage in some shenanigans to get that one figured out.
Because at that point, she's become more than just the person to help them find Nova. She has started becoming sort of adopted in ways into the crew. So we've got Alana with her necessary medication. And one of the things that I thought about as I was reading this book, when she started running out of her meds, was, you know, and then she was rationing. Remember, she was mm-hmm. like, and I kept thinking about how in the States people do that now. Yep. They ration their medicine because the States kind of sucks with regard to healthcare. And so I kept thinking, you know, she's trying to ration and the small amount she's taking barely takes the edge off the pain that mm-hmm. that becomes part of her existence, and the way she's able to sort of like, and to a certain extent she can't, but there's that scene where she's trying to like look at the engine and her head is in such pain and she's like trying really hard to focus. And I can't imagine what that must be like for someone who does actually have to deal with that on a day-to-day basis and think about, okay, well, you know, my medicine, I have to have this or I can't do that, and to make conscious decisions about what you can and cannot do in the course of a day. So I really appreciated those descriptions of her dealing with this stress of not knowing if she's going to get more medicine and then what's going to happen if she does mm-hmm. not. I mean, she had that fail safe, remember? She had that pill.
The transliminal solutions.
Right. And that's another element, another area of stress here, is that there's another sort of force, for lack of a better word, there's another force out there that is kind of like, it sounded to me like it was like a corporate takeover, basically, of the galaxy from these folks who are, you know, oh, no problem, we'll just give you this med and everything will be fine. But will it? Because then you will be beholden to whatever this is for the rest of your freaking life. And it becomes kind of an addiction. You become addicted to this transliminal solution. So she consciously decides not to take that to alleviate her pain. And she just lives with the pain until she can get her tried and true medication. And they do manage to get some for her. But man, that was really, really tense for me. Was like mm-hmm. dealing with her illness and the lack of medication. I that really created an interesting layer for me, because that's not something that you get in a lot of books, is that tension of the chronically ill and are they going to be okay if they don't get their medicine?
Right.
So kudos for that. Let's talk about world building, Lise.
Yeah, so I really enjoyed the world building on this. It starts out as on its surface as, you know, a kind of your standard like space opera-ish milieu, but pretty quickly
I love that word.
I know. Milieu. I couldn't remember the word environment.
I like milieu.
But yeah, pretty quickly we start to get sort of these aspects of like the metaphysical, the magical, and Alana and Nova's relationship is sort of like crystallizes those two. We have Alana, who is, you know, an engineer and very much in tune with like the tech parts of the world, where Nova is this spiritual guide, advisor, therapy, guru person.
Guru.
A jig. who is very much attuned to the more metaphysical and magical parts. And these two women do not understand each other at all. Which I think is really interesting, because in some ways, Alana and her sky surgeon stuff, she does understand some of where Nova is coming from. Because, you know, she does understand that there is more than, like, you know, the circuits and the wires. Because she forms a much more sort of metaphysical connection with the ships that she works on. But Nova doesn't seem to really make that connection at all. And, yeah, they both kind of spend a lot of time feeling like the other person is the most selfish and unreasonable person in the world.
Sisters.
I know, right? And I love those kinds of relationships, because, you know, you end up coming away from it a little bit of like, okay, well, you can't both be right about this, you know? So it's like, I love looking at that and being like, okay. I mean, maybe there's a little blame to go around on this one.
That I love the sister relationships. That's become one of my very favorite things. In various TV shows and movies and books is the very, very complicated relationships between siblings, especially sisters. And Nova, friends, you know, this whole spiritual guide thing, it's like, it's a major industry in this world. So these spirit guides are sought after, and Nova has a reputation for being like a really excellent spirit guide. So that plays into this too, when they end up managing to get Nova onto the ship, because basically they kind of kidnap her in a way. You know what I mean? We're going to go do this, but they're playing her off Alana. You know, if you don't come with us, we're going to hurt Alana. And we, you know, like kind of using Alana's situation to convince Nova to come along. And then during the course of this journey, we're not going to tell you, you know, no spoilers, but there's a whole lot of things that happen that create even more layers of tension for the whole crew, as the crew is kind of trying to negotiate with each other, like, who are you in relation to my crew? Can I really trust you? And blah, blah, blah. And we see sort of Nova and Alana kind of relating to each other in different ways and developing sort of a little bit of a stronger relationship. Do you think that's fair to say?
I do, because I think, you know, before they only ever really interacted in the space of their home. Neither has ever seen the other one in action doing the things that they do best. And in this particular set of circumstances, which ends up with essentially the entire galaxy looking out for them, thinking that they have done one of the most horrible things you can do. During that set of circumstances, they both get to see how the other one works and what they bring to, you know, to the universe and to each other and to this group, which, you know, is this family, this crew, which has started to open up to include the two of them.
Even though Nova was kind of an ass, let's just
oh, for sure. I mean, Nova was totally an ass. I mean, Alana was also an ass to Nova, so
there's assness going around. A lot of assness.
Oh, there is so much assness going on. But you know, I mean, and it's one of those things, right, where it's like, you know, you can talk shit about my I can talk shit about my sister, but you better not. You know, you definitely get that vibe.
And that was really funny to watch that develop, and to watch it was Nova actually who recognized that Alana was starting to see, I put that in quotes, to see things not necessarily through her eyes, but through other senses. And it was Nova who picked up on that right away.
Yeah.
And that was really interesting to me because the sense I got was that Alana has always kind of had sort of a metaphysical sorts of abilities because of the way that she bonded with ships.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the Tangled Axon. And there are reasons for that. And we're not going to talk about those because no spoilers, Nanny Boo Boo. But I found that really interesting. Like Nova doesn't recognize that she's actually Alana doesn't recognize at first that she's actually got maybe a perspective that Nova has that she was refusing to acknowledge or accept. Because sisters, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, and not only sisters, but also there's this tension between Alana and Nova in that Alana is sick and Nova is not. Mm-hmm. And Nova is doing things with her body that are antithetical to the way Alana feels
mm-hmm.
should be done to a body, given her own relationship to her body, if that makes sense. So, you know, Nova is doing things that really make Alana feel like she's taking her health for granted.
There you go.
Which mm-hmm. is something that Alana can never, ever do. Every day, every time she takes that pill, she is reminded that she has this disease. And here's Nova, who is as healthy as can be, and who is choosing to do things that put an incredible amount of strain on her physical health.
That's a really good point. There was the scene where, you know, Nova is, she's basically not eating. She's refusing to mm-hmm. eat as sort of a, I think I took it as kind of a fuck you for her circumstances, but also as sort of an aesthetic thing, like, you know, those mystical kinds of people who are like, I'm going to fast myself into enlightenment. Mm-hmm. And certainly there is something to be said for that sort of thing, for fasting, but it was like,
yeah,
she wouldn't stop doing it, you know?
Right.
And that to me was interesting too, because I thought, okay, so are we dealing with someone who has an eating disorder, perhaps? And that's something that we don't really see in fiction is characters who experience an eating disorder. Like mm-hmm. this, I think, although I don't think Nova ever vomited, it wasn't described, but she definitely was not eating. And Alana was getting really frustrated with Nova for sort of like becoming very, very thin, like too thin.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, for Alana, health is a gift, and it's something that Nova is just sort of throwing away without mm-hmm. understanding the consequences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good way to put it. The world building, I want to talk about a little bit, too. You know, we're on the ship, so we've got these characters, but we're also flying around space, and the sense I got was that we're dealing with a lot of different worlds that are in the throes or thrall of, what's the word I'm looking for? Shitty capitalism. Mm-hmm. where a lot of these worlds are under corporate control. And that certainly was Alana's setup when at the beginning of the book, when we're introduced to her, she's working at a shipyard, you know, junk and parts and salvage everywhere. She's barely making ends meet and she has to scrape together money to get her meds. Like, it's like it's like so real to what a lot of people experience now, frankly.
For sure.
In the world. So I thought that was an interesting, not necessarily a blatant indictment of capitalism, but it definitely, because Alana definitely talked about the shittiness and how she couldn't get ahead and how it was just like a matter of survival and it got really old.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that the only way it felt to really sort of get beyond bare subsistence level is to sign on with the big corporation, which is once again Transluminal Solutions. And as we go further into the book, you start to realize that, okay, so Transluminal Solutions is not only this like massive corporation, which is essentially like peddling dreams, but they're not exactly from our world either. Remember, mm-hmm. they go to that planet, which is like basically like a hedonistic pleasure planet, that a lot of people from the Transluminal Solutions world come to sort of experience the hedonism of our world.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm being very broad in definition of our world right now. And, you know, so you start to understand that it's like, okay, it's not only that they are, like, the corporate overlords, but they are also just different. There is something very different about the people from the Transluminal Solutions world.
There's something really hinky about them, too.
Yeah, right. I'm not going to get any further into it because we're, you know, we'll tread too close to spoiler territory. But, you know, so there's also this. And then what is it like to then be beholden to beings who aren't even from your world?
Mm-hmm. And which is why Alana has that, you know, really mixed feelings about having the ultimate solution to her illness mm-hmm. via, let's just call them Big Farm, right? Big Pharmacy.
Yeah.
like she has this really like mixed reaction. And so she decides I would actually rather be in pain than, mm-hmm. than chance being beholden to this entity, this corporate dystopic, you know, sort of weird entity. By the way, Hedonistic Pleasure Planet is either going to be the name of my next band or my memoir, please.
Excellent. I heartily approve.
All right. So what we've got going on is not just, you know, the space adventures and trying to get Nova where they want her to go so they can save one of their crew members, but there's also the interpersonal relationships that are developing on the mm-hmm. ship. You've already said it, that Alana is developing an attraction to Tev. And
yes, which is really inconvenient because Tev and Slip are quite obviously together and have made no bones about the fact that they are. And Alana feels very conflicted about having this attraction to this woman when she really likes Slip as a person. Mm-hmm. You know, Slip is sort of the person who gives her the idea to stow away. And for a long time is her only real ally on the crew. And then she's repaying her by, like, she thinks trying to take away this woman that mm-hmm. she's in love with.
Mm-hmm. But, and, you know, Lisa and I went back and forth on this, and we're not going to spoil it. But let's just say that, what was the term we used? An unconventional relationship. Let's just say that.
Between consenting adults.
We don't want to spoil it. And it was something that you just don't see in a lot of mainstream fiction. And so we were very, very excited actually about that. Again, because we're trying to expand our own horizons into reading writers of color and characters of color. And, you know, it was kind of a surprise to me, but not so much, not really.
It developed very organically, I thought.
It did. There was a really nice organic development to this relationship between Tev and Alana. And, you know, anyway, you all see. So I found that aspect interesting, how Tev and Alana sort of were at total odds at first. Total odds. Mm-hmm. Just like butting heads. And then there was, you kind of watched it evolve over the course of time in a really interesting way, because they were still kind of frenemies, I thought, at first.
Mm-hmm.
That's
a good term for it.
You know, there was like, and there was a mistrust there for obvious reasons. I mean, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, I mean, Alana did stow away on her ship, yeah.
She did have the incident that caused Tev's quarters to have a problem.
She burned down Tev's quarters. I mean,
okay, not a problem. Not necessarily on purpose. Okay, she was actually in the process of extricating some scariness from the Tangled Axon. You know, so she was trying to do the right thing, but she was also in the throes of, she hadn't had her meds in a while, so mm-hmm. she was in the throes of trying to balance her pain levels with trying to actually fix something very, very delicate, and it resulted in an explosion that created
a minor catastrophe.
So just a minor detail, mm-hmm. right? So it's one of those enemies to friends to maybe a little bit more as you go on through the book. And I like the way that was handled because it wasn't as tropey as it could have been.
Yeah, for sure. I really enjoyed that also.
And then we've got the relationship between Alana and Nova sort of evolving mm-hmm. into what I felt was a genuine sort of new level of understanding between them that they just had not
yeah.
had.
Some, before. I think some actual respect for the lived experiences of the other, I think is mm-hmm. what that boils down to. I mean, you know, they were able to get past the sort of, you know, there's that juvenile way that you interact with your siblings, and then at a certain point you really mm-hmm. get to see them as actual people and not that person who really irritates you all the time. This I'm now speaking from my own personal experience with three brothers.
Same.
You know, three brothers I fought with like cats and dogs, and now that I'm older, that who I enjoy quite a lot, but it took us a while to get there. And you know, they have to do this. It just takes them a little bit longer, and being stuck on the ship together with the galaxy out to get them to make it happen.
It was a really great catalyst, actually, to get them to the point where they could sort of start seeing each other in a more complete yeah. way. And yeah. I thought that was really well done, how that relationship evolved.
Mm-hmm.
So I really enjoy it. Again, I'm into the whole sisters thing. Like, I just love watching the complicated relationships between sisters, and I'm speaking from experience. So I like to see it in books and on TV and in film. Do you have any final thoughts, Lise, on Ascension, Jacqueline Koyanagi?
Well, if Ms. Koyanagi ends up listening to this, I would like to respectfully request a sequel, because I'm just really interested to see what comes of the characters after the way this book is written up. And, you know, the book stands on its own. It ends at a place which is perfectly satisfying. I just love the characters so much that I want to know what else they end up getting up to.
And you know, Lise, we're both writers. So we know mm-hmm. what it is when readers are like, oh my God, when are you going to write another book?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, life interferes. We get it. You know, so, but the fact still remains that we enjoyed this book a lot. And mm-hmm. if the author decides to write another and to follow up, that would be great. But no pressure yeah. because we
no pressure.
Get it.
100% sure.
We get it. So anyway, thanks all for hanging out with us. Let's do some shout outs. Lise, you have some?
Well, not really, because I've been spending some time working on a new top secret project that I'm really super duper excited about.
That's a shout out. It's a top
secret
shout out. It's a top secret.
All right. I have a top secret shout out that I can't tell anybody exactly what it is. The only person who knows for sure is my wife.
Which is fair.
Yeah.
That's fair.
You know, totally fair. Everyone will find out about it in the not too distant future. I just, it's so cool, but I can't tell anyone.
We get it. So that, so have you been reading anything, watching anything for another shout out, or doing anything to like bring peace to your troubled thoughts?
Frankly, I've been leaning a lot on the comfort stuff lately.
So beer! I'm sorry.
In addition to beer. We just finished watching Avatar The Last Airbender, which I really enjoyed, even though I have a couple of sort of irritated quibbles with an aspect of how it wrapped up. Overall, you know, the plot wrapped up perfectly fine. It's just some of the writer's decisions about some characters at the very end that I have I have thoughts about. Thoughts with a capital T. But that's been really nice. I rewatched The Old Guard because it was great.
A thousand times, right? Because it's so uh-huh. worth it.
And yeah, no, it's just been, you know, hitting the things that I know will bring me some joy, because, man, we need it right now.
We certainly do. Well, I'm excited to learn about your top secret shout out here. So I'm going to be like staying close on the Twitters to find out what the top secretness is all about. I'm going to like do a couple shout outs. A shout out, please. As you know, I got new Vans with mm-hmm. little green alien heads on them, and I freaking love them. And they are now my official podcast shoes. So I'm wearing nice. Those right now. I have posted photos on Twitter and on Facebook because Whoever thought of putting little green alien heads on shoes? I don't know. Thank you, whoever thought that. So I call them kind of my Area 51 shoes, but you know, mm-hmm. the truth is out there, people. I'm just saying.
And they're on Andy's feet.
Mm-hmm. The other shout out I have, friends, Wynonna Earp season 4.
Ooh.
Oh. What? The episode 2, y'all. And everybody's talking about this, you know, so no real spoilers, but there's a scene, a reunion scene between Waverly and Nicole. And it is one of the most beautiful, erotic, loving sex scenes between two women I have seen on television in a show. I mean, you know, you get that all the time for heterosexually identified characters or for male-female couples. You don't ever get that for queer couples, at least hardly ever. And this was just like, it blew the wigs off of all of us watching it on Twitter. I know the entire ERP fandom just had a major meltdown. And then people just started talking about it afterwards. And so there's still conversations going on about it. And it legit made people cry because they never thought they would see anything like that representing, you know, their love for another woman like that. If you're a woman identified person and seeing that on the screen, it was truly beautiful. It was truly amazing. And the music was good too. Good choice, y'all. I'm all, wow, that's really good music. And then, you know, there's the scene in the background. And so it was like, oh yeah, there's sexy times too. But it was a fabulously gorgeous scene. And, you know, maybe not yet, but I think that scene is going to become a major game changer and it's an important historical moment in terms of queer lady representation in media. I mean, that scene is going to become that if it hasn't already started its journey. So if you are ERPers, I hope you are watching season 4. If you are not ERPers, oh my God, why not? Go start watching it. Season 1 through 4 through 3, I think you can get on Netflix. And season 4, of course, is going now. It airs on Sunday nights for me. So anyway, get yourself some ERP. What in the hell are you doing? Get ERP'd. Just saying. That's my shout out. Please, any final thoughts?
Well, another couple of weeks.
Before what? The secret project?
No, just we've been through another couple of weeks.
Oh, God.
We'll get through another couple. It's one foot in front of the other.
It's like August already, y'all. And I'm just like, what the fuck have I been doing this year?
I know. We've been home since March.
Same. Thank God that we are fortunate and privileged enough to do that, that we're in positions where we can take care of each other in that situation, that we both still have jobs.
Yes.
I am forever grateful for that. But as you know, I've been doing a lot of projects like you have. I've been growing vegetables for the first time in 1,000 years. And I'm like, wow, this is really interesting. Been doing a lot of, like, you know, making of shelves and that kind of thing. It's just like, I think it's made me appreciate even more my friends and family this time, you know. So, and it's made me think that I think it's important for us to sort of get out of the consumer capitalist mindset and to focus on what's really important, you know. That's just my take on it. And of course, I'm trying to help where I can folks who aren't as fortunate. Anyway, all of y'all, please stay safe out there. Take care of each other, take care of yourselves, especially, and just be safe. Oh my gracious. We will be back again in a couple weeks with another cool thing that we're going to be talking about. We hope you find it cool. Anyway, you can find us on Twitter, LGO Podcast. Please drop us a line or drop us like thoughts or things that you'd like us to cover. Or if you want to be on the show, what the hell? Let us know. And you can find us on our website, lesgeekoutcast.com. And you can find Lise on Twitter. Oh my God, this is hard. Write it down. Lise McTagg. You can find me also on Twitter. So hard. Andy Marquette. So thanks, y'all. We really appreciate you hanging out with us. Take care and see you in a couple weeks. Or hear you in a couple weeks. Whichever. Bye. Hedonistic pleasure planet.
Can I play bass for your hedonistic pleasure planet? I would ask to play drums, but I only know one beat, and it's the one from We Will Rock You.
Which is we'll put you on drums for that one song. How's that?
Okay. I know, because unless we want all of our songs to sound suspiciously like that, we're going to need another drummer.
Funny you should ask, Lise. I actually do play drums.
Oh, well, there we go.
Back in the day, you know, and keyboards. Oh, my God. Wow.
Yeah, I know. I can play piano. Yes. I'm sure I could teach myself bass. I mean, it's all just the same. You know, it's the same note. Uh-huh. And I can read music. It'll be fine. I know. I just like insulted every bass player out there.
But, you know, barring having a band, we could name our bar Hedonistic Pleasure Planet.
Oh, there we go.
I'm just saying.
Or our brewing company.
Oh, there we go. Shh, don't give anybody ideas. Let's close down crap. Right now. Oh my God. Shh.
Yeah. Okay.